Hello, and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John. Alex is here, at least in spirit or digital audio format that we captured a couple weeks ago. And this is the second episode of our massive, sprawling tribal episode. If you're still with us after that abrupt cut from 2 weeks ago, last time we covered soldiers in white, we covered merfolk in blue, and we covered zombies in black. In an effort to separate out which tribes are really well supported and which ones are still lacking in that support. That means we have red and we have green left to cover, and we'll just take it away from here. And before we get on to red, let's just take a moment to breathe and say, so what are those key things that we're looking for in these different tribes? Things that are our payoffs and our enablers. The most powerful tribes are including lots of both of those things and less just dumb bodies to put on the battlefield. Black with zombies, we saw that we have ways to just get repeatable card advantage from creatures coming back out of the graveyard, from adding blue into the mix to be able to draw and loot for more cards. In blue, we saw the advantage that Merfolk was giving us with the ability to draw cards, the ability to buff our tribe once we got into green with putting +1/+1 counters onto things. Essentially ways to convert your board presence that's already there into things beyond simply attacking and dealing damage. Once you're able to leverage that for more powerful effects, that seems to be what really separates the wheat from the chaff as far as tribes are concerned.
Yep, and just to give you a bit of time in the sun here, the exception that proves the rule, your favorite mono-white undead cat.
Oh, Okatra, just don't leave poor Okatra out in the sun. Well, actually, do leave her out in the sun. She likes a sunny spot.
But it is a mono-white zombie commander that necessarily doesn't care so much about zombies, cares more about just playing creatures. Incidentally, it makes a lot of zombie tokens.
It does. Well, let's keep things moving along then. Let's talk about red. Let's talk about the tribe that kind of the exception that proved the rule initially. Let's talk about goblins.
Goblins, yes.
Goblins, goblins, goblins. So even from the beginning, we kind of saw goblins through even the earliest portions of Magic being pretty good at going wide. We had that early odd support with cards like Goblin Matron that lets you look for other goblins, cards like Goblin Churgeon, which allowed you to sacrifice goblins to regenerate, cards like... There was just so many weird ways to exploit goblins that I think goblins kind of found their identity as a tribe very early on in Magic's history. Yeah. As this exploitable, a never-ending resource.
Yeah, just it's just living cannon fodder.
Yes, exactly. Goblin bombardment is called that for a reason.
But it's funny because out of all the tribes, including black and green in this one, which have huge emphases on tribal synergy, none of them in their own individual unique colors have the level of tutor for another of X kind of card than red does. Of all colors, of all tribes, goblins let you tutor for more goblins, and not just on one card. There's a handful of them that says, hey, go get another goblin. Just tutor for a goblin.
So that means we've got Goblin Matron. We have, what are the other ones here? I should know this at this point since I had Goblin Recruiters.
Yeah, Goblin Conspicuous Snoop lets you get to the top of the deck.
Back, yep.
So it's just, it's for cards that look within themselves. Like, there's no individual elf card that says, when you play this elf, go tutor for another elf.
Oh, there is, but it's not a particularly good one.
Yeah, fair.
But yeah, this is something that you don't really expect out of red, but has become kind of ubiquitous within the goblin tribe of goblins beget goblins. Once you have a goblin, you're going to have lots of goblins very quickly. So very early on, goblins were very good at establishing that board presence that we want. And we're going to talk more about board presence in a couple of minutes when we get to our key commanders for this tribe. But we also saw very quickly that early support where they began expanding beyond just Goblin King to give your goblins +1/+1 and Mountain Walk. And once we hit the onslaught block, we got cards that went very wide with goblins and weaponized goblins in unique ways. And definitely one of the best ones that sees play outside of goblin decks, but is really, really good inside of goblin decks, Let's talk about Siege Gang Commander.
Siege Gang Commander is a 2-2 goblin for 5 mana, 3 generic and 2 red. When Siege Gang Commander enters the battlefield, create 3 1 on red goblin creature tokens. In and of itself, it's 5 mana for 5 power divided amongst 4 bodies, which is great for what goblins want to do.
Exactly.
On a side note, you pay 1 and a red, sacrifice a goblin, Siege Gang Commander deals 2 damage to any target.
What was that you said about cannon fodder?
Yeah, literally, load goblin into a cannon, fire goblin at target.
Exactly. We saw cards like Skirk Prospector, 1 red mana for a 1-1 with the ability sacrifice a goblin, add red to your mana pool. Literally, turn goblins into fuel for more goblins. We saw additional lord effects like Goblin War Chief. We saw additional payoff cards like Goblin Pile Driver. Red went all in on goblins. Goblins have always been fairly good, but goblins did eventually get even better.
They did, and the exception that proves the rule is normally all the decks we've talked about so far have gotten stronger with the addition of additional colors to kind of give them more utility. While goblins have gone in a different direction by adding colors, in this case specifically green and then black later on, their main focus of being a mono red never diminished because of this. It simply changed what you could do with them.
Right.
If we're looking at adding colors to it, the first one that comes to mind for me in Jund is Shadow Gang Brothers, which adds a whole bunch of utility to goblins and also sticks with that, hey, cannon fodder mentality.
Right, where you're able to sacrifice those goblins.
Yeah, so Shadow Gang Brothers is a 4 mana, 3-3, one a black, a red, and a green. For one and a black, sacrifice a creature, everyone else sacrifices a creature. One in a red, you sack an artifact, everyone else sacks an artifact, and one in a green, you sack an enchantment, everyone else sacks an enchantment. The big thing here is the fact that it gives you options to black, so removal, things of that nature, green for ramp, you know, red for haste and things of that nature, but for the most part it says, hey, I have a bunch of goblins, and now I have a way to sacrifice them and cause my opponents to give up creatures as well. So for a small investment of 3 mana and a 1-1 goblin token, I can make you sacrifice your commander.
Right, right. And red, by just doubling down on red, well, yes, you have branched out a little bit into green and a little bit into black. Really, the strength in goblins is that they just kept so concentrated in red and kept doubling down on what red does best. Eventually, I mean, you and I have talked about just how powerful of an effect haste is. And you talked about in the past why adding red to your elf decks just to have access to haste was so powerful. Well, red brought it on a lord with Goblin Chieftain, bringing haste to the entire tribe. And you know which goblin in particular is really good when you have haste?
Yep, and that brings us to our key commander, the cream of the crop, that is goblins, and that is Krenko, mob boss.
Oh, Krenko. Go ahead and give him a read.
So Krenko is a 3-3 for 4, 2 generic and 2 red, and he does exactly what a mob boss of goblins would do. Tap. Create X 1-1 goblin creature tokens, where X is the number of goblins you control.
It's short, sweet, to the point. Oh my god. God, if you've never faced a Krenko deck and you don't think you have to worry about that guy who only has, you know, 2 little dorky creatures on the battlefield, just you wait.
Yeah, so we talked about Shadow Gang, Siege Gang Commander earlier, where it's 5 mana for 4 bodies. That's fantastic. So you play a Siege Gang Commander on, you know, one turn, follow that up with a Hasty Krenko on the next turn. Congratulations, you now have 10 goblins on the field. Yeah, that's a thing.
Which we've already talked about how goblins in red are just going to keep exploiting. They're going to be able to turn them into mana off of Skirk Prospectors, turn them into damage off of Siege Gang Commander, turn them into pump off of Goblin Pile Driver. There are more than a few Goblin Lords. We already mentioned Goblin Chieftain, but there's also Goblin War Chief, there's also Goblin King. They've got the same strength of having multiple lords that tribes like Merfolk have, while also having additional payoffs, while also having the ability where the setup cost for goblins is basically nil. If you have 2 goblins on the field, you've got an army waiting for you because so many goblins make more goblins, and they have such a strong commander to turn a few goblins into a literal ton of goblins.
Between Siege King Commander, Skirk Prospector, and Goblin Surgeon, you can deal non-combat damage. You can generate mana. You can protect your lords from a board wipe. You just regenerate them. And it just keeps on going. And where in other decks, it's like, cool, I've got a couple of Merfolk lords, and I've got, you know, three on the battlefield. They're all 3/3s. That's fantastic. You know, doubling up on lords isn't as pervasive, isn't as, you know, deadly to your opponents as it is with multiple goblin lords, because their numbers just exponentially grow out of control.
Right. And honestly, one of the weaknesses of goblins as a tribe is kind of made up for by their strength. Their strength being, you can put a lot of goblins onto the battlefield easily. In fact, I would say, like, if there was a tribal ability for goblins, we're going to get into green in a little bit with making mana, but goblins beget goblins. Goblins bring other goblin tokens with them. That seems to be their tribal ability. Goblins are not very good at becoming evasive. Evasiveness tends to be their weakness, but being in red, their form of evasiveness is usually just going super wide and having haste to hit you out of nowhere.
And kind of, and we'll mention this again in green, unofficial, you know, honorary goblins, that where if you see a goblin deck, you're more than likely to see, you know, these creatures or these enchantments follow along with it. The honorary goblin club member here is Purphoros, God of the Forge.
Purphoros is 3 and a red for a 6/5 legendary creature god with indestructible. It has the standard Theros god devotion clause of, as long as your devotion to red is less than 5, Purphoros isn't a creature. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, Purphoros deals 2 damage to each opponent. Then it also includes a powerful pump effect, which most people even forget about. 2 and a red, creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn. Yes, honorary goblin indeed.
Yeah, like, there's a wall of text that says it's a creature and he's indestructible and you can pump. That's widely irrelevant. What it really translates into, hey, this is indestructible, and whenever you make a goblin, to the table. Have fun.
Exactly. So, goblins as a tribe and red as a color has kind of emphasized that it doesn't matter if your creatures are dorky. They can be buffed. Sure, a lot of tribes do that. Goblins also kind of reflect the ability to exploit that resource advantage you have on the battlefield and use it in ways besides just swarming. And although they are very good at swarming, they are also good at weaponizing that presence on the battlefield and turning it into advantage in other ways. Not necessarily card draw like you might see in other colors, but often just into dead opponents.
Gotcha. And then some of the notable mentions for goblins. Obviously, you have a Muxus Goblin Grandee, which came out of Jumpstart, which is a powerful effect. It's 6 mana for 4/4. Whenever it enters the battlefield, reveal the top 6 cards of your library. Put all goblin creatures with converted mana cost 5 or less from among them onto the battlefield, and the rest in the bottom of your library. And then whenever Muxus attacks, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn for each goblin you control. So it's a mix of see the top 6 cards of your decks, plus a goblin pile driver. Which is great in limited or one-on-one formats, less so here, but still notable mention as it is pretty much an auto-include in goblin decks, just not at the helm.
And I would also say that Pasholik Mons, which came out of Modern Horizons, Pasholik Mons being 2 and a red for a 2/2 legendary creature goblin warrior, whenever Pasholik Mons or another goblin you control dies, Pasholik Mons deals 1 damage to any target. Yeah. Again, going back to that expendability. And then she has a weaker Krenko type effect of 3 and a red, sacrifice a goblin, create 2 1/1 red goblin creature tokens.
Having a wide board of goblins with the Pasholik Mons in play just pretty much means if someone board wipes you, you're going to be dealing a hefty amount of damage.
Yeah, there's a strong possibility that you can reach the point where in your Krenko deck, if you have Pasholik Mons on the battlefield, unless someone has a bounce spell like Cyclonic Rift or Evacuation, people are probably dead no matter what.
Yep, and the last 3 cards worth noting are, the first one sees a ton of play in pretty much any format of EDH, and that is Doxed Extortionist, which, fun fact, Merchant Goblin. Doxed Extortionist is a 1/2 for 2. When it enters the battlefield, create X treasure tokens, where X is the number of artifacts and enchantments your opponents control. So it's ramp on a goblin.
Mm-hmm. And what ramp it is.
Enough to the point where it is nearly format warping for inclusion in red.
It's amazing.
And another one on that list worth including is Squee the Immortal, which is the goblin version of Mist Hologriffin for Fruit Chain decks. It's 2 and a red, and you can cast Squee from anywhere. From exile, from your graveyard, from your hand.
From your hand? That's nuts. Oh, wait, your hand. Okay, now I understand.
And then the most recent addition is Conspicuous Snoop, which is a 2-mana 2/2. Play with the top card of your library revealed. You may cast goblin cards from the top of your library, and as long as the top card of your library is a goblin card, Conspicuous Snoop has all activated abilities of that card. That last little bit is the real kicker here, as it's opened up some doorways for some pretty crazy combos out there with Kiki Jiki and whatnot.
Absolutely, that's what I'm exploring my Samoot deck right now. And you know what other color Samoot brings to the table?
Green!
Brings green. So why don't we move on to green? Alex, take a breath. I want you to try to contain your excitement. We had a very long, drawn-out debate as to what tribe we were going to discuss when we got to green. I can't keep a straight face. We talked about elves. We're going to talk about elves here.
But I have all these notes on phthalates. What? I thought we were doing phthalates and fungus. I'm confused here.
No, that would take too long. Three turns to get one token. Nah, we can go faster. We can ramp harder.
But Slimefoot, Spore Boy is life. I don't know what's happening here. We're talking about elves. If there is any tribe that is synonymous with a color and an idea, it's elves. I mean, and I don't really think they need much of an introduction.
Yeah, from the beginning, though, just like you saw that goblins kind of had their identity very quickly of swarm, elves had their identity of mana and ramp. Llanowar Elves is just format defining. It is game defining. It is color defining, I would say. The idea of a mana dork. For one green mana, you get a 1/1 creature elf druid. Tap, add green to your mana pool. Wait, doesn't that sound familiar?
That can be literally any number of 1-mana creatures that tap for mana.
Findhorn Elves.
Findhorn Elves.
Elvish Mystic.
Birds of Paradise.
So elves brought and really emphasized the color of green's ability to ramp, and that has been part of green's share of the color pie since the beginning, and it has only grown with time. And in a lot of ways, the early lords that we saw come out for elves were very divergent from what we saw in blue with merfolk lords giving buffs, or black with zombie lords giving buffs, or red with goblin lords giving buffs. Instead, we saw those early lords counting the number of creatures you controlled and paying you off in different ways.
Yeah, it wasn't a creature lord, it was a mana lord.
Yes, and when we're talking about this, we're talking about one of our personal favorite cards for both of us, Priest of Titania.
Priest of Titania is just a 2-mana elf, one and a green, and essentially she reads, tap, add green to your mana pool equal to the number of elves on the battlefield.
Yes.
She doesn't boost other elves. She does nothing for herself. She simply says, hey, there are X elves in play. You're going to get X mana. So the original or the early lords of elves weren't for the creature type itself. They were literally lords for mana.
Oh, they were for the creature type themselves. They weren't necessarily there to make your creatures better. They were there to weaponize your board position and turn it into, in this case, mana advantage. And as we've learned in Commander, that is one of the most powerful things you can have. The person with the most mana is often the person who wins. Now, Priest of Titania wasn't the only card that did this. We saw this printed again and again and again throughout the history of Magic. In Onslaught Block, again, that big tribal set, you had Wirewood Channeler. Wirewood Channeler is 3 and a green for a 2/2 creature, Elf Druid. Tap, add X mana of any one color, where X is the number of elves on the battlefield. Moving a little further, we got Elvish Archdruid. This one did include the proper lord effect of providing all your elves +1/+1, while also replicating the effect of Priest of Titania, where it would tap and add green to your mana pool for each elf you controlled. And eventually, we got into one of Alex's favorite, most motherly elves of all time.
Marwyn.
Marwyn the Nurturer is 2 and a green for a 1/1 creature elf. Marwyn gets an additional +1/+1 counter each time an elf enters the battlefield under your control, and you can tap her to add green to your mana pool, where X is her power.
And this theme of, you know, boosting mana didn't just stop there. It got to the point where, you know, one of the early legends for elves, Rafelos, Llanowar Emissary, it's a 2/1 for 2 green, and it simply says, tap, add a green mana to your mana pool for each forest you control. That card is rightfully banned in EDH.
Yes, and banned it should remain.
It does nothing for your immediate board state. It doesn't make your board bigger. It doesn't cause your opponents to sacrifice resources. It simply just generates oodles of mana.
Yes, and oodles of mana is so easy to exploit. And one of the things that we've been harping on a lot with elves so far is that there are so much redundancy in these effects. You have so many one mana dorks in green that are all happen to be elves. Llanowar Elves, Elvish Mystic, Arbor Elf, which isn't technically a mana dork, but it untaps a forest, so whatever, it does its job. You also have Findhorn Elves. You also have, help me out, what's the one from Cold Snap? Boreal Druid. Then, moving up a little bit in mana cost, you have multiple two-mana dorks coming off of the powerhouse like Priest of Titania. Moving up, you get even more powerful three-mana dorks. Marwyn the Nurturer, you have
Elvish Archdruid.
That's so much mana.
Yeah. And the thing is that, and this is more prevalent in, it's gotten more defined in recent sets. Ultimately, the goal originally for elves was generate a bunch of mana, stick something giant, hope it gets the job done.
And that was one of my first, like, decks I built back during the days of the Tempest block, where my job was to try to stick my elves and then turn my elves and turn them sideways and get a Verdant Force and hope that was enough to get the job done.
Yep, and then we fast forward a little bit, and once again, the first set that was defining for Tribal, or the second set if you count Scourge and things of that nature, Lorwyn. Lorwyn mm-hmm. gave us the... In my personal opinion, one of the most broken, compact, functional commanders you could possibly ask for if you want to do big plays, generate tons of mana, and also go wide for one mana. And that is, of course, Rise of the Redeemed. So Rise of the Redeemed is a hybrid mana, a green or a white, for a 1-1, with two abilities. Two generic and a hybrid mana, green or white, tap. Create a 1-1 green and white elf warrior creature token. Relevant here, it has two relevant types, elf and warrior. It's also a token. Its second ability, 6 mana, 4 generic, 2 hybrid. For each creature token you control, create a copy of that creature token. So early game, Rise comes down turn 1, and you start doing token things. You get multiple elves, you get tokens out there, and then if you just need a mana sink, just start doubling up. Just go crazy with it.
And go wide. And as we said, you're already weaponizing that going wide into turning into more mana, which is a very powerful thing to get.
Yeah, and with cards that are, you know, and elves never lack for support. That never, every set that comes out in some way, shape, or form has something that you could somehow work into elves. You mentioned a bit earlier me wanting to work red into my elf decks, and realistically it is a single card that makes you want to do that. It's Rhythm of the Wild, and that was just one card that doesn't say elf anywhere in the title. It is an enchantment for one, a green and a red. Creature spells you cast are uncounterable. That's amazing in and of itself, and they have Riot, which means they come into play with either +1/+1 counter on them or haste. So that was from War of the Spark, a set that realistically had nothing to do with elves, but had a card in it that was just so appealing to what elves wanted to do that it's just like, you know what, I'm going to add another color just for that.
Exactly. And elves have expanded through the color pie. You mentioned Rhys the Redeemed, where we added white to them. Prior to that, we saw black in the first two sets of the Lorwyn block, but elves have also stayed fairly concentrated in green as their primary color, although they have kind of dipped their toes into just about every color on the color pie.
Yeah, and some more successfully than others. There are some blue-green elves that exist out there, and they're all well and great in the 99, but none of them really stick out to me as commanders. So much so that I actually can't name any of them off the top of my head, aside from...
Well, there's Edric, Spymaster of Trast, for one a green and a blue. You get a 2/2 elf rogue, and whenever a creature deals combat damage to an opponent, that creature's controller draws a card. And yeah, he is not an elf. He's not an elf commander. He is a flying man commander.
Yeah, and you know, I stand correct on this one. Mormir Vig is also a Simic elf.
Mm-hmm. And he a good commander, but he is an elf commander in a way, but less for elf tribal and more for combo shenanigans.
Indeed. And kind of cycling back to what I had mentioned before about white being, you know, the best assist color, the inclusion of white into Rise and that token concept brings us kind of back full circle to what we talked about with soldiers, with wanting to go wide and be paid off for your board presence. And there are a couple of key cards that have been printed throughout the history of Magic that kind of just emphasize this, and none more so than Doubling Season.
Doubling Season.
Doubling Season is a 5-mana enchantment, 4 and a green. If an effect would create one or more tokens under your control, it creates twice that many tokens instead. And if an effect would put one or more counters on a permanent you control, put twice as many of those counters on it instead. Both things the deck wants to do. And because one good turn deserves another, how about Anointed Procession, which is pretty much the top half of Doubling Season, but in white. It is 4 mana for an enchantment, 3 generic and white. If an effect would create one or more tokens under your control, it creates twice that many tokens instead.
And while we're at it, why not throw in Parallel Lives? 3 and a green for literally just a green Anointed Procession. Although Parallel Lives came first, so shouldn't we just call Anointed Procession a white Parallel Lives?
Yeah, so not only... And you think that, okay, so redundancy is good, but how many, like, for example, haste enablers? Well, if you have one haste enabler, how much more useful is the second haste enabler? You can't give them double haste. But when you stack effects like Parallel Lives and Night Procession, Doubling Season together, that matters. Those effects
absolutely.
Those effects do stack.
Powerfully supported, well, not specifically tribal cards, they certainly reward your tribal deck that is able to start going wide. And green and elves in particular also bring some very strong effects that, while not technically lords, do a lot of a lord's work. For example, one of the most powerful mono-green elf commanders, I would say, is Azuri, Renegade Leader. One and a green for a 2/2 creature elf warrior. You can pay green to regenerate another target elf, but really, the reason you run Azuri is to pay 2. Green, green, green. Elf creatures you control get +3/+3, and gain trample until end of turn. Hey boys, hey girls, it's time for an overrun effect.
Yeah,
on a relevant creature type.
And if, you know, one, like I said, one good turn deserves another. If Azuri has an overrun effect, what if we just took that dial and just turned it up to 11? So where we had...
Maybe not to 11. What about to 8?
Eight works too. So while we had Perforos as the honorary goblin, we have Crater of Behemoth coming in at 8 mana as the honorary elf. For 8 mana, 5/3 greens, you get this behemoth of a creature. 5/5, haste, which is good enough itself. When Crater of Behemoth enters the battlefield, creatures you control gain trample and get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control.
That'll do it. Many games have been ended by getting hoofed.
It is very few and far between that I've ever seen a Crater Hoof Behemoth resolve and someone not die.
Mm-hmm. Tends to be resolution equals death for somebody at some point.
And we did talk a bit earlier about and soldiers, and it loops around to here. Cards like Akroma's Memorial, Eldrazi Monument, and Coat of Arms, where you get paid off for, you know, having a board presence like this, not necessarily tribal specific. One I did not mention earlier, like, you know, shame on me for forgetting, that is a newer addition to that concept, but specifically designed for tokens, is Divine Visitation. It is a 5-mana, 3 generic and 2 white enchantment, and it simply says, if one or more creature tokens are created under your control, that many 4/4 white angel creature tokens of flying and vigilance are created instead.
But Alex, John says, that's going to stop your tribal synergies.
No, it's simply elves ascending. The elves died in the battlefield and are ascending to Valhalla.
So again, it's a way that you're taking your advantage, in this case, your engine, and turning it into a powerful endgame effect. Trying to bring the game to a close, in this case, with Flap Flap.
With so much Flap Flap.
Yes.
Riding on the wings of a Crater of Behemoth.
Now, as we've made our way through the color wheel, one of the things that we've seen is that there are a number of things that distinguish a good tribe from a bad tribe. Tribes that are able to emphasize different aspects beyond just going wide are able to turn that gone wide resource into other resources, like card draw off of Kumena with Merfolk, like damage directly to the face off of cards like Krenko, making more goblins to feed a siege gang commander for goblins in red, for turning your board presence into ramp with elves. These are ways that tribes have managed to grow away from simply being, this is more vanilla creatures that I'm going to turn sideways, and more into generating useful resources that we as commander players are looking for. Some tribes have not been able to reach that critical mass of useful cards, or, even importantly, have a powerful commander. One of the things that we mentioned was, for a long time, Merfolk did not have that strong lord in the command zone that they needed to really have a proper deck, but Kumena flipped the script on that one.
Hold my Krenko, beer.
Krenko kind of did that by himself in mono red. Just mono red goblins are a thing, and they are very good. Some tribes, you had mentioned before your Markov deck, and I would argue before Markov, it was very hard to make a proper vampire tribal deck work. Yeah, you could kind of do it with Olivia Voldaren in Rakdos, which was the primary color pair for vampires in Innistrad, but you were still generally looking at very expensive creatures in a very small concentration. You weren't really going wide and trying to build a board presence. You were trying to exploit a few powerful vampires.
Yeah, Olivia, like, it was a cool effect, and I'd face some Olivia Voldaren decks when Innistrad was around before Markov, but to say that there's a disparity in power between Olivia Voldaren and Edgar Markov is a bit of an understatement.
Mm-hmm. Where Markov can very happily play cheap little 1- and 2-drop vampires and have a very powerful board extremely quickly, similar to what a card like Krenko does, Olivia Voldaren takes time to slowly ramp up, get Olivia out, slowly start turning your things into vampires, and then, yes, she will probably eventually beat you to death in the air, but really, it takes time to get there.
Tribal was such a popular concept that in 2017, Wizards based their entire Commander product line after Commander, where Edgar Markov comes from, and it probably gave us the single most spoken tribal effect that Magic has ever printed, Eminence. And essentially just means this triggers from the command zone.
Or does its thing, right, from the command zone.
So, is Edgar Markov a good creature in and of itself? He's a 6-mana, 4/4 with haste, and whenever he deals combat damage, put a +1/+1 counter on him. That's fantastic, it's a good creature, but not necessarily worthy of the command zone simply by those characteristics. His Eminence ability simply says, whenever a vampire enters the battlefield under your control, create a 1/1 vampire token to go along with it.
Just double your bodies.
Yeah.
It's such a powerful enabler for everything else the deck wants to do.
And you 100% can win a game with Markov vampires without your commander ever leaving the command zone. It's like, here's a 1/1 vampire, here's 2 power. Or here's mm-hmm. here's a Child of Night, here's another vampire. Life is mm-hmm. great. Can they counter it? No. Can they get rid of it? No.
Built upon the tribal synergies from both the Innistrad block, where you were in black-red, and the Ixalan block, where vampires were separated into black and white, being able to build out a powerful board across many bodies, and then have those anthem effects from red and from white. Yeah, it doesn't take much for a Markov deck to close things out. And I think that's one of the keys, that when you have a powerful lord that does one of these things, either as an enabler or a powerful payoff, especially when it can be in the command zone, that can mean the difference between life and death for a tribe.
But, I mean, that brings up a quick question, but does it need a commander for some things you want to do?
Right.
So, one of the cards introduced for this were, you know, if you wanted to play a tribe that wasn't really represented, came in Modern Horizons in the form of Morphodon. And, John, I know you've got some experience
with Morphodon. Yeah, Morphodon the Boundless is 7 generic mana for a legendary creature shapeshifter. It is a 6/6 with Changeling, which means this card is every creature type. As Morphodon the Boundless enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. Spells you'd cast of the chosen type cost Wooburg, white, blue, black, red, green, less to cast. This effect only reduces the amount of colored mana that you pay. And other creatures you control of the chosen type get +1/+1. So this allowed, in theory, anyone to build any tribal deck they want. Finally, we said, we can have our tribal sponges deck.
Indeed, and in typical, you know, taking a page out of Kamina's book, in Hold My Beer status, Throne of Eldraine gave us Kenrith, the Returned King.
Kenrith has nothing to do with tribal. I don't know what you're talking about.
So if this, let's imagine a world where it is 3 a.m. and you can't sleep, so you're watching infomercials on TV. And you come across this infomercial that says, do you want to build a tribal sponge deck? Do you want to do everything Sponge wanted to do? Are you tired of your sponges wanting to be elves but can't quite be elves? Well, boy, do we have a commander for you. And that is Kenrith the Returned King. He is the pretty much slap chop of commanders.
So Kenrith, the Returned King, is 4 and a white for a legendary creature human noble. He is a 5/5. He has everything in his text box. Red, all creatures gain trample and haste until end of turn. 1 and a green, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. 2 and a white, target player gains 5 life. 3 and a blue, target player draws a card. 4 and a black, put target creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under its owner's control.
Yeah, he's pretty much a slap chop, but stun. Chops this, chops that, gives it haste, +1/+1 counters, draw a card, gain some life, reanimate your threat. It's fine. Also, if they took inspiration from Monty Python, the Holy Grail, he's pretty much King Arthur.
Yeah, he is. He is. I'm not so convinced that he is the end-all be-all of tribal, though.
He's the end-all be-all tribal commander for cards that don't actually have their own tribal lore to get behind.
Okay, give me an example.
Minotaurs would be a good bet, I think. I also
Okay, so in Minotaurs, then, we'd be probably centered in black and red, right?
Yep.
So if we're centered in black and red at that point, we're really going to be looking to activate the haste effect, which we've kind of acknowledged is a really powerful effect, and then also the reanimation effect. Minotaurs being a little bit more expensive in general, I could see that sort of working.
Okay. And then the added boon here would just be the access to green, access to +1/+1 counters on target creatures. And hey, there's green in the commander cost, which means there's green in your deck, which means, hey, there's ramp.
All right.
Also,
I'm not 100% sold on it, but certainly I can see where you're going with this. Is just a generically powerful commander.
If I wanted to build
this tribe.
All right, so we'll go on this one. Tribal humans.
Okay. So we know that is a powerhouse deck in Modern, at times the most powerful deck, at other times kind of slides down a little bit in the scale, but convince me.
All right, so it has a little bit of everything that humans would want to essentially do, and there are some powerful humans that kind of exist in that scope of things. So I think it goes without saying, I don't think any creature type or any board presence doesn't want haste and trample to some capacities.
I think we've established that pretty firmly.
That's kind of a given. So, with Eldritch Moon, I believe, we got some fun lore in regards to humans. So you've got cards like Thalia's Lancers that helps you tutor up legendary creatures. So creatures, say, okay. Like legendary humans like Captain Sisse, the Modern Horizons version, which, fun fact, is also 5 colors, on two stuff. Heron's Grace Champion, which is just a human knight from Eldritch Moon. It's 4 mana, green and a white. Flash, lifelink, when Heaven's Grace Champion enters the battlefield under your control, humans you control get +1/+1 and gain lifelink until end of turn. So it is a 3/3 flashy lifelinking combat trick with a relevant tribal type to Kenrith.
Okay.
But they're, like, human is such a common type for creatures that you could just pretty much pick and choose the strongest effects from them and add them together. Most recently...
So similar then to what we saw in... when we were talking about goblins and zombies, like, you're just always going to get good goblins and zombies just incidentally across sets, even when there's not a strong tribal theme, because humans are so ubiquitous as kind of our generic placeholder race for everything in Magic. You're just going to incidentally get some good creatures that happen to be humans.
Yep, and the same. That's why the new General Tazri from Zendikar Rising is the same way. It cares so much about the party mechanic, where it looks at clerics, rogues, wizards, and warriors so much that you're bound to get a good cleric, wizard, warrior, or rogue per set. Like, something has to hit. And if we're looking forward to the future with Kaldheim and then Strixhaven, I mean, you're going to have warriors and you're going to have wizards coming up in the next actual block sets. So.
Yeah, okay. You haven't quite convinced me yet, but I can definitely see where you're coming
from. I feel like with research, Kenrith could be in an episode in and of itself.
It certainly could be. Maybe that'll be our challenge for this time. Maybe I'll say, Alex, why don't you show us your moves? Why don't you build us a Kenrith the Returned King human tribal deck? And it's got to be human tribal. So at the very least, I'm going to say we're going to have to go above the requirements from EDHREC.com. I'm going to say it can't just be 6 other humans inside of the deck. We got to go a little bit bigger than that.
That's fine. I think I can do that.
All right. Challenge is accepted?
Challenge is accepted.
All right, folks. You heard it here first. Alex is going to be building us a human tribal deck with Kenrith the Returned King. He is going to put his money where his mouth is. Or I guess not money so much.
No, it's cardboard. It's magic.
His honor?
I have none of these things. It's fine.
Fine. Well, he'll be doing something for our entertainment in that case. All right. So closing thoughts then on tribal as a theme in Commander. We've saw throughout this that the ability to turn your board presence into different resources is what really makes a tribe strong, whereas tribes that are not able to turn a board presence into something anything other than attacking tend to be among the weaker tribes that we've seen. Being able to turn it into mana in the case of elves, being able to turn it into damage in the case of goblins, being able to turn it into reusable card advantage in the form of merfolk, being able to weaponize the graveyard in the case of zombies. This is what makes a tribe viable, and then having a strong commander to be able to gain access to all the colors you need to give you the pieces you need to build that tribe, that is what makes a truly strong tribal deck in Commander.
And I think whether, you know, it's something we think about whenever we're building new EDH decks and all that, I think at one point in time all of us at play have, you know, dabbled or, you know, been drawn to the Siren Song that is, you know, tribal in Commander. The appeal that it has towards, you know, building a deck around a synergy that you love. And while elves may be near and dear to me, other people, different strokes or different folks might have different tribes that appeal to them, but that that fantasy of having this deck put together that functions as a cohesive unit and lets you, you know, put into play these imaginative situations on the playing field is something that I think, you know, rings true for all of us.
And just looking at our own group, we've had a couple of newer players join the game recently. One of our friends was very drawn to having ninjas. So when she heard that there was a ninja lord in Yuriko, Tiger Shadow, she jumped on that immediately. And then another one of our members, my sister actually, was so excited when she heard about Rin and Siri Excitable. Inseparable. She was excitable. So were cats and dogs. But having a cat and dog tribal deck, to say that it was an easy sell would be understating things just a little bit.
I mean, we had her coming, to the table and with just cats to begin with, with a Robbo from Commander 2017. So being able to add the bestest boys to it was a lot.
Exactly. We talked about some of the strengths of tribal. The synergy is baked right into it. We talked about some of the weaknesses, where once you lose your board presence, that setup cost becomes more expensive. And we identified that when you have a deck that can reduce that setup cost, whether because your creatures are reusable like in zombies, whether because they come with an army in the can like goblins, or whether because just by sitting in your command zone, you have an army in a can waiting, like in Markov's case, a lot of tribal decks, and probably the strongest tribal decks, are the ones that can get around these weaknesses.
That was a mouthful, and this is
It was a mouthful, but I just wanted to summarize that, oh my god, we are at like an hour and 40 minutes. Guys, yeah. I think retroactively this is going to turn into a two-parter episode, so at some point in the middle of this, I'm going to have a cut. It's going to have no fancy sound effects or anything, but we will try to make this behemoth of a topic into something more digestible. Alex, any other final thoughts on Tribal before we call it a day?
If you're new to Commander and you haven't built a tribal deck, I recommend doing it. It's fun, it's excitable, it's kind of addicting, and then you end up with like 14 different decks. But that's try tribal, it's great. I promise you won't get addicted. It's fine. Everything is fine here.
good old tribal. Well, I think that's enough for us to talk about today. Why don't we call this one to a close, and why don't we get ready for next time? I'm not sure what we're going to talk about next time yet, but after a marathon like this, maybe something a little bit lighter.
We'll talk about artifacts.
Oh, God, no. Well, until next time, I'm John.
And I'm Alex.
And we'll see you again soon. You can reach the crew from Gemstone Mine on Twitter at GemstoneMineMTG, or send us an email at GemstoneMinePodcast@gmail.com. On YouTube, we're Gemstone Mine Podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell.